Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to this episode of Atomic Witchcraft.
Here, we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a craft that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi everyone, I'm Ash, an atomic witch walking an eclectic road since the 90s.
I'm Alyssa, about 20 years in and growing a mostly green path.
And I'm Jay, new to the practice, composing a bard witch's craft. Because witch weaves together many webs, past, present, and future, we'd like to acknowledge that we are currently practicing our craft on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Duwamish, Muckleshoot, and Puyallup tribes.
The Atomic team participates in Real Rent, and we encourage you to engage with and contribute to similar programs in your area.
Welcome to our grove, here at the Atomic Hearth. Now, let's get witchy.
Welcome back to the Atomic Hearth. The full moon is approaching, and with that, we bring you our fourth full moon focus episode, this time wrapping up my second topic of the year, sigil magic. This path focuses on the art of creating and utilizing sigils in one's craft, and as we covered last time, opens up the intersectional world of visual art and magic. This episode, you'll get to join me on my candid journey, diving into a re-101 experience with sigils, creating a new one of my own, and learning quite a lot in the experience. I'll also share a little meditation to help you get off the ground and into your imaginative space to ignite those initial sparks of creation for your own sigil making. So be sure to listen through and catch that as well. But before we put on our artiste caps, some fundamentals will set us up well here, as sigils can and may work their way into your witchy life in any number of ways. So let's dive into a little Witchcraft 101 for a moment to set the stage.
While today's episode is going to pick up on our discussion around sigils, we also wanted to provide space each full moon to address the infamous "where do I begin" question with witchcraft. Now, if you've been practicing a while, don't skip ahead just yet. Consider how revisiting the foundational techniques and questions of our practice can actually provide more context, layers, depth, and space. A bit of a refresh, reaffirmation moment, if you will. So we encourage everyone, no matter how long you've been practicing, to join us in re-exploring the foundations of our craft. In the Witch's Wheel model, the foundations make up the center spokes, the key elements of self-awareness, meditation, mindfulness, are ones we've touched on so far. In the past, we've mentioned history of the occult and meeting the witch within, and as we continue to refine the Witch's Wheel framework, we recognize that when a witch first gets started, there's always a desire to get, well, into the witchy shit. And while self-awareness, meditation, and mindfulness are key, they don't necessarily feel particularly witchy on their own, and that can make a lot of witches skip that first round, which, honestly, in my perspective, makes for a bit of a shallow, surface-level practice, which is 100% okay, but these elements provide a depth that is pretty infinite. It's why I encourage seasoned witches to continue to return. Sometimes we lose touch, other times we just find new ways to dig deeper or zest up our crafts. But the depth keeps us coming back, learning more, and making real impact in our lives. It's also so important to know the long-existing history of the occult. The occult has always been with us. In records back as far as we have them, we have looked to the mysteries of the universe and how to solve them. Over time, the occult and practices such as astrology and alchemy became the sciences of astronomy, physics, and chemistry. There has always been a tie of numbers in the occult as math steps in. As we humans developed methods of tracking and systems, and as these methodologies evolved, so did groups like the Egyptians, Greeks, Rosicrucians, pagans, and folk magic, each with their own take on the mysteries of the universe, and the way we as humans can shape our world. This evolution is one worth having at least a basic understanding of, and we highly recommend A History of Magic and Witchcraft and the Occult by DK Publishing as a great book. It's a little bit pricier, but it's beautifully illustrated and takes one on a journey through time, bringing us from the ancient to the new age. Now, as I mentioned, we are consistently revising and updating the framework, and we got to the history of the occult, and we felt like it wasn't quite enough to dip one's toes into witchery, to really get a feel for it. There are so many ways to be a modern witch, so that being said, we do tend to have some, you know, common repertoires we all pull from. So we expanded this topic from just history of the occult to essentially witchcraft 101, to encapsulate those common repertoires. This topic becomes about learning the basics of the craft, everything from the history to the different types of magic, like chaos, ceremonial, to things like altars and the basic witch's tools. It's a topic that addresses why we do spells and how rituals differ or expand on that principle. It's about learning what divination is and why witches do it, to understanding what it means when witches speak of ancestor or shadow work. It's an overview. It's not an in-depth dive, but it's enough that as a witch who is just beginning, one might get a good sense of history, various traditions, and common thematic basics. Now, over the next coming episodes, we will be touching on each of these topics individually or in pairs, and getting a little bit more in-depth, so stay tuned. Witchcraft 101 continues next time.
As Ash mentioned, delving into the history of magic is a great kickoff spot in Witchcraft 101, but expanding on that idea, I also think that exploring different kinds of magic, different kinds of witchcraft, different spiritualities is a great way to start. It's how I did it. We offer here a pretty specific witchcraft practice, which is science-based, deity-free, and practiced via lens of the elements. And if you don't vibe fully with this or do so but want to add on to it, feel free to go exploring. Sarah Lyons does a really great job in her book, How to Study Magic, of providing a fantastic overview of all these different paths one could go down. It's the main reason why we consistently recommend it on this podcast. She goes through ceremonial versus chaos versus older traditions like the Rosicrucians, etc. So if you're looking for a great overview source, that is a great place to begin. Or, as I mentioned earlier, you could just start delving into multiple resources and trying different things out. Don't be afraid of the exploration process. Just be mindful of appropriating closed cultural practices. A closed practice can come from a living culture, like Irish paganism or indigenous and Eastern societies, or it can come from cultures that you were not raised in, like hoodoo and voodoo, or it can be a watered-down version of a spiritual practice, i.e. a white woman teaching out about yoga and chakras. For more info on what this means in witchcraft, check out episode 66, Cultural Appropriation, Decolonize, Deprogram. Now you might be wondering, okay, once I've looked into all these, how do I choose? Well, for me, it was trial and error. I tried on different hats, different approaches to spell work, different aspects, and kept the ones that fit and let go of what didn't. Your approach might look different. You may try one path for a year and then move on. Or you might just know and run with it. There's no right or wrong way. Another layer that this kind of basic overview, this exploration adds, beyond just providing some great paths and areas of interest, is that it adds meaning behind the why of what we do. Why do we have altars? What's the difference between a spell and a ritual? Why do we say as above, so below? Where does that come from? Sure, you can totally just charge ahead with your practice without that context, and as Ash said, that is like okay, but it's like soup with just broth and veggies. Is it delicious? Yes, absolutely. But adding this layer of context is like adding the meat and the potatoes. It's the rib-sticking goodness that adds the richness to your practice. And then once you've got this base layer understanding of the hows, the whats, the whys, the whens, this is where you can start to customize your path. Maybe you don't like keeping an athame on your altar, or find that full moon energy isn't a great time for spell working. Going through that affirmation, exploring and learning process makes customization easier because you have the hows and the whys down.
Another angle on a Witchcraft 101 quest is the initial journey in discovering what witchy looks like for you. So as Ash said, this is all about getting out there and getting a little taste of all the things. So alongside learning the origins of things like altars and spells, common tools, you might spend time here scanning around the ways your witchy life might be shaped and customized. That is where a lot of the idea of the witch's wheel framework really came out of. For some witches, look, it's going to be all about getting their hands in the dirt, But for others, it can be crystals and rocks. For you, it might be music and song, or perhaps it's the kitchen and the hearth. Again, this isn't about diving super deep into anything at all, but instead discovering and absorbing in the variety of it all with a divining rod that's tuned to the simple question, what in my life and the world feels really witchy to me? And to be clear, this kind of exploration is one to be done in addition to learning the history and the common tools and the methods and where they come from. It's about developing a collective awareness. So for instance, if you're someone who deeply loves the ocean and feels really connected to nature and energy in that environment, you can pair that with knowledge of how traditions have connected with the sea over time, how certain tools or magical techniques are used to connect with it, to fill out that Witchcraft 101 background in a way that's unique to you. So if you're new to the Witch's Wheel framework overall, some past episodes of ours could be really well-timed for a re-listen here. Number 70, A Witch's Wheel, good starts, where we started this thing. Definitely recommend pairing that with 137, that's Witch's Wheel 2.0, for our most recent witchy software update.
That's so good.
But also great would be any of the episodes in between these, where we explore all the various paths. I say all in big quotes because we're definitely going to keep updating this. Yeah, there's a 3.0 works, people. But we explore a lot of various paths of across the elements. So this is a great time to touch on all the sides and angles possible, keeping it surface level as you get acquainted with the many ways your own witchy craft will work best for you. And making sure to say it here, it may very well be some combination of things. You know, don't feel any need to hold yourself to what we've laid out in the framework so far. So stay tuned for more of this Witchcraft 101 topic. We're going to dig deeper into the specific elements, either in singles or pairs, as we go in the future episodes. Welcome back to My Workings with Sigil Magic. Last episode, we got things started with some background on sigils overall and why I chose the topic to fit into my year. Well, today it's the thrilling conclusion. Okay, I'm not sure how thrilling it'll be, but it is the conclusion.
We're always thrilled.
Let's jump into how my lunar cycles went as I explored and tried things out and learned a lot along the way. As I mentioned last time, I chose this topic as a 101. Beginnings sort of course of study. I had spent a limited time with the topic a few years ago discovering an initial definition via How to Study Magic by Sarah Lyons, then making a first sigil as part of that. And look, that was a perfectly fine experience, but I hadn't given it a ton of time or focus and was very much ready to give it a second go. Another big reason I picked this, the visual arts have long been a domain seemingly beyond my worthiness. I tend to be a pretty creative person, but in these first few years of my craft, I've stuck with only the crafts and mediums I'm really, really comfortable with. Audio things like speaking and singing, movement and dance, the written word. This omission wasn't subconscious. It was very much conscious. In my mind, I just wasn't a good enough visual artist to even try that world on for size, so I just didn't worry about it. But as you've probably picked up by now, I do love exploration, even if my biases caution me away. And gosh darn it if this lovely grove of witches here doesn't time and time again surround me in such a annoyingly healthy atmosphere of learning and openness that I continue to try new things. Seriously, how dare you two? Who do you think you are?
Hey, we're catalysts of change.
It's true. Oh, I like that. And so this obvious and intentional gap in my creative practices was to be bridged. And Sigil Magic landed in the plan of my year. And as you heard in the last episode, I moved along the first lunar cycle here with learning and developing a plan to follow. I started diving into my lovely new guidebook, Laura Tempest-Sakharov's Visual Alchemy, to provide some helpful structure and expert guidance. Per Ash's excellent advice, I got myself a little sketchbook and some lovely colored pencils. I started playing around with meditating via doodling, and I was having fun with it. Shapes!
Yay!
shapes, triangles, lines, circles, spirals galore. It became a whole new way for me to sink into my brain, to feel the motions of shaping and gliding along the page, and just to let my unconscious brain search and listen to what my heart really wanted to say.
I think that there's something so primal in us that just loves those things, and you get to, like, tap into that.
Yeah. And you know, this led me directly into this idea of a witchy power-up sigil, something that channeled into my witch within and sort of opened the doors up when and where I needed that boost of witchy magic, but distractions or what have you might normally make it a challenge. And that's where I left off last time. And that's when I got stuck. I put the book down. I put down the colored pencils.
Yeah.
It happened really quickly. And I would say things to myself like, oh, you're really busy right now. And you know, come back to this when you have a better idea of your intent. And sure, being busy, finding the right time, these are important things. But it wasn't really any of that. It all just felt really weird. Visual arts in general. Shadow work time, friends.
Dun, dun, dun.
It arrives. This landed me on the full moon of the first lunar cycle here, which for me is a great time. I like to do meditations on the full moon. That's like prime meditation time for
me.
Yeah,
me too.
To do this like deeper working. So first I went back to some tarot I drew after my initial meditations. Like I actually did one on the new moon. And to come up with this witchy power-up sigil idea. And I had asked for these three cards. I asked for a how card, give me a little guidance on method. I asked for an outcome card, give me a sense of like what my finish line might look like for this topic. What could I get out of it? And a guide card that I love to sort of add on the end for almost any sort of spread I go for a little splash of advice to sort of carry along the way. My guide card was... I'm going reverse order here. My guide card was the Fool reversed. Cool. Okay. Reminder, maybe not to get overwhelmed by all the newness, to stay simple in my aims and expansions outward here. Like don't go too big and like totally lose the balance. The outcome card was Ace of Coins. For me, that's a new doorway opening up professionally. And I wasn't sure exactly what that meaning was, but like I figured, okay, I'd find out.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. But oh, my how card, which I may have skimmed over a bit when I drew it. 'Twas death, my dear Grove. So after revisiting these cards, I visited the astral to sink in. And that's sort of, I do that often as like a two-parter. I meditate and then I sort of go a little deeper to see what actually is going on. I don't usually have full-on flashbacks here. I like never do. That's not what tends to happen when I sort of fade into this space, but suddenly there I was, very recent, maybe 6 months ago, I think it was, like a year ago, recently spending time in the house I grew up in, leafing through folders and nostalgia-laden archives of my mom's safekeeping. And you know what I found in those underbed plastic tubs? Drawings, sketches, for fun, for silliness, for friends, for my mom, for the joy of reproducing the ideas and things I found to be excellent. I found old cartoons I used to draw for myself. I had made
always
my own
an artist.
Characters. So coming out of the meditation, I opened up Visual Alchemy again because I felt the need to do so, and I found myself staring at this beautiful quote. Image is a direct line to thought, as well as all the ideas and emotions that come with those thoughts. Through image, we can speak in ways that words cannot express or give form to. That is, if we're not afraid to use art as our voice, to connect to something beyond ourselves. End quote. To speak in ways words cannot give form to? The release of the imposter syndrome here charged me forward. This craft of sigils wasn't just a chance to try something new. It was to speak a new magical language beyond words. It was to make art through magic and magic through art.
And maybe inadvertently to bring you back to your childhood self.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's always that reconnection when people say, like, you know, how do you connect with inner witch? Sometimes I'm like, go back to who you were as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
when you believed in magic. Ro, exactly. Believed. A key word there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Okay, before I go off all day waxing philosophically, because I keep doing that, let's step back real quick to set up the method, LTZ. I'm going to call her that. I hope that's okay. The vibe I get from the book is she's cool with something like that. So I'm going to say that.
Maybe we can email and ask.
I'm going to check. offer the method that she offers here. I'd like to step back real quick through it. It's a broad stepwise guide to crafting a sigil. She sets us up in sigil witchery and then re-references it and uses it throughout visual alchemy. Step one, you determine your goal or problem. Step two, brainstorm what is needed to achieve that goal and what will create the solution, listing relevant words, phrases, and assigning a mark or symbol to each. Step three, design the sigil by combining these marks and symbols until you're satisfied with the result and the design. And step four, apply and or acknowledge your sigil as necessary. So far, you've heard my step one, the goal to create a sigil to channel my witch within when the problem of feeling too distracted or either externally or internally was at hand. I aligned my first lunar cycle with step one. So starting with the second new moon, I brainstormed what I needed to achieve that goal via my doodling. Now, this got me to a mix of six words or concepts which really stood out to me. I'd like to share them with you so you can follow along with my real journey here. They ended up being wisdom, power, focus, strength, story, and love. These words and the symbols that spiraled out of them into my sketchpad became a fascinating cloud of magic, which I could feel beginning to billow before I even had these words in mind. I could feel the magic of this work from the very spark of the idea, and it started to brighten and spread throughout me. I dreamed about my symbols. They started appearing in my everyday life, and alternative ideas and symbols expanded my thoughts into like new realms, and so my symbols settled as, sort of how it all came together, antlers for wisdom, okay. Energy rays outward for power, a spiral for focus, roots for strength, and a quill for story. I recognize describing shapes is not good, like good radio, so I promise to share visuals in our Discord and Patreon real soon so you can actually like see what I'm talking about, as well as the actual finished sigil. I got to, of course. So from here, I paired these words and symbols.
I was just going to say, you left love out. Is that on purpose?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, thank you. I totally left that out on my list. Love was a pair of intersecting curving lines.
Oh,
sort
okay.
of curved, almost like dancing with each other. Thank you. No, that's a great... Of course, my partner here reminds me of love. I might have been thinking of you. From here, I paired these words and symbols with mundane actions. Always important here. What would this witchy power up empower me to do? What mundane choices would carry the magic along? And I came up with a freeform sort of list of words, journaling, that to be witchy was to be kind, giving, patient, strong, true, open, and present. To name a few. The list is even longer, but that's sort of a jumble of what it was.
I understand. Grooming that list is really hard.
Into my second full moon here, it was implementation time. Time to take these symbols and make them a sigil. I was really excited about this, y'all, but I had a little conundrum. I really wanted to do it right on the full moon, but I was going to be out of town for work in New York City, which is like different than Vashon Island.
Very different.
And I've never done this before, but I brought along with me the components that I needed and that I wanted to set up a little traveling altar in my hotel room. I'm curious here. Have either you done spells on the go like this?
I mean, I think at some point every witch kind of faces this moment of not being in the usual location for a ritual. And there is definitely a toss up between do I do this on the go and nail that timing, get it right, or do I wait? And I think some of that revolves around the magnitude of the work at hand. Now, if it's a big culmination, I might actually try to plan that to be in my usual location just because I want to have all my resources. But that being said, I've also spent time in my life where my whole altar was portable and I never did a ritual in the same place twice. So I think there are some key things about, you know, just practicing in unfamiliar locations that can be important. And this is where energetic protection circles become more important for me. When I'm working on home turf, I tend to have really cultivated that energy. I don't really need to reset it because I reset it every day, right? Like, it just becomes part of me. But when I'm in unfamiliar territory, there is less control of that established energy, which also means I tend to, you know, really vibe check a space before I work there. And then a good cleansing and a circle cast can really make a difference. You do have to be mindful of the rules of whatever space you're in. This includes like no fire, smoke, or heavy scents. These kind of things can be, you know, especially if like you're in a hotel room. Yeah. Right? Which means travel witchcraft does encourage you to get creative, right? You sometimes have to shrink down what you're working with, or, you know, like think a balsam versus a broom, think small crystals versus like the big geode on the home altar, right? So you do have to kind of get creative in how you maybe translate your spell into a smaller portable means. It's also like, if you're flying, you got to make sure all that stuff's going to go through TSA. So
yeah, that is a real factor.
You're not going to bring a bottle of moon water in your carry-on.
Or knives.
Well, less than 3 ounces of moon water is fine. It's fine.
As long as it's in a sealed container. So, you know, I think there's a lot of power there. And especially, you know, if you can, you know, keep up with something that you're working on, right? Like, I don't think witchcraft on the go is totally viable and very good. And like I said, it gives you a chance to get creative. And there's still a lot of power of doing things through more subtle means, like whatever your version of visualization is, you know. So for cleansing, you know, keeping it down to a good walk around the space to calibrate things is better than nothing, right? And so sometimes that's really all you have to work with because of the limitations of the space. So that aside, I just recommend, you know, like I said, keep it simple so you don't have to travel with a lot of items. Shoe boxes or box makeup kits actually make great portable altars and witch kits.
Yeah, since you posed this question, I've been trying to think of a time where I've had to do this, and I just really can't think of anything, like, anything big I've had to do. Like, honestly, anything I've done, like, away from home turf, so to speak, would have been, like, a need born in the moment.
Right.
Like,
right.
I felt like I needed protection, so I do, like, a little, like, protection, like, work on myself, or I'm in a situation where I needed luck to kind of turn into my favor, you know, so I put a little bit of that. It's mostly energetic based at that point, because I am away from my tools, so I put out those sort of, like, energies, or, like, kind of shift, try to do a little bit of a reality shift that way. Or if I need to, like, weave a little charm to get someone to do what I need them to do, you know? But it's always very much like I need this in the moment. I've never brought a spell with me intentionally. So that's really interesting. But I also realized, thinking about this, and you mentioned, like, travel altars, I'm like, oh, I'm woefully equipped if I need to do this. I've got, like, all of my altar stuff is kind of very spread in, like, little bits and pieces everywhere. It's like, I mean, like, in a pinch, if I needed to bring, like, it's an emergency and I need to bring altar stuff with me, I could always deputize one of my many tote bags as a vessel to bring it. But yeah, it's like, oh, now I should actually think about doing a travel altar just in case.
I have a travel altar in my emergency kit.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, no, 100%. We were Smart. Just talking about needing to build an emergency kit.
Gotta have your red backpack, friends.
Gotta have it.
Thank you so much for those answers. And it's interesting that this all, as you'll hear, I think I instinctively went some of these directions. So my experience with this moment felt great. It really did. Even in a somewhat foreign location. I set the space with some elemental representations, which, to be fair, on my own altar at home are very simple. They're singular, generally small items on my altar for each element. Like, it's nothing that I couldn't fit into a 4x4 box.
Okay, but can I ask what you used, because since I know you were in a hotel room?
Oh, yeah. Well, so there's four, it's four crystals.
Oh, okay.
So
you brought them with you.
Yeah. So I just brought the four, one for water, one for earth, for fire and air. Yeah. So that was it. And it's very, very simple. My sketchbook, which obviously that kind of stuff is easy. Cause I was sketching and doodling on the plane, right? Like, that's fine. For me, and again, I'm a big, as a bard witch, music is like essential to me, and so I mean, that's easy. So I just prepared music. I just picked stuff that was going to be great for this ritual. I cast a circle. I allowed my imagination to take the center stage, and I sat down in my sketchbook in the middle of my makeshift altar, and I started to play around with design concepts. And this is really what all of this full moon moment was to be about. Before this, I had picked up a lot of great advice from chapters 2 and 3 of Visual Alchemy, including a couple of interesting areas of experimentation, which I started to play around with here on the page. Where and how were the symbols going to be placed? Were they going to be far from each other, near each other, touching?
Yeah, proximity is important.
How did things look in symmetry, asymmetry? What if I mirrored things, flipped them around? What motion could the sigil capture? That actually ended up being very important. Is there a feeling of movement I'd like it to convey in its design? And finally, was this too much for one sigil or not enough in terms of details and or like crowding? What allows the sigil to breathe where it needs to or exhibit structure and stability where it needs to?
Yeah, I love that.
The resulting sigil, which I promise I'll share, felt powerful and correct. And I even found that as I sketched, my mind consciously accepted a few variations as backups, and as if my inner witch replied, yeah, maybe we could try that at some point. Like, yes, this feels great, but still an openness to evolution in the future. So finally, in this full moon moment of completion and coming into being, it occurred to me that my sigil could be shaped off the page in movement.
Love this.
And gestures. So I got up and I just started embodying the design. As soon as I saw it, I like had to stand up and start doing it. I started dancing and moving and feeling the artwork in my own bones and limbs. The air focus of this moment, which ultimately was like the driving element of this entire experience. I felt like I was flying as I was working on this. The air focus of this and the sigil itself, drawn in light blue to channel the open sky of possibility and freedom, it just had me up and out of my chair and twirling with the energy and magic. The next day, I had a particularly meaningful opportunity to provide a closing remarks sort of address to a work group of teams.
Yeah.
And I definitely felt that extra wind in my sails.
Ooh, yay.
It was really well received in the moment, but apparently so much so that the next day or two, I had folks coming up to me unprompted to share how my words were both salient and inspiring to them too. So like that ace of coins, just right?
It all comes
indeed,
back.
It showed up in the outcome.
Patterns, friends, patterns.
So rounding the corner through the third new moon, back on Bashan, I expected my reflection and adjustments to be pretty much focused on adjusting my sigil over time as needed. You know, what other ways could I build new sigils? That's when the shadow work snuck up on me again. As I tried to reflect, I struggled with burnout. Yeah. After all of this energy output and positivity, for a few days, I felt weighted down, soggy even. What had I forgotten? There must be something I could have done better here. I don't want to feel this every time I use this thing. So my third lunar cycle gave me the space and time to work with this. I'm so appreciating this three moon duration
for these topics.
And it got me to this point. My sigil was all about lifting up, channeling concepts like flight, freedom, movement. But I once again had forgotten about the death card, what I needed to release to lift off the ground, to acknowledge my lofty hopes was to subconsciously tether my heavy fears with me. So I realized moving forward that in any sigils, it might be quite handy to incorporate elements of not just the goal, but the problem too, of not just the world beyond, but the world to leave behind.
Oh, I love that. I will also say, you know, with the flight, there's something to be said about incorporating something too that allows you to land or ground, down, right? Because, you know, once you're soaring, it's
sometimes hard to
come
back. If you don't have that runway, sometimes it's just a crash.
Yeah, 100%.
And planes can run out of fuel.
Yeah, no.
Even birds, they gotta eat sometimes. So now, I know y'all have questions for me. I think this is probably a great time to dive into those.
With this particular sigil, I know that you use like a colored pencil to sketch it. Do you think you're going to explore other mediums like ink, paint, thread, bedazzling?
I'm going to level up to bedazzling. I'm not going to jump right from pencil to bedazzle. But Yes, definitely. Paint's already the plan for the passion project, the creative project. Although they might not actually be sigils, the practice will be there for me in that for sure. For some future sigils, I think I'll definitely be going beyond paper and pencil. Rock and chalk is an interesting one I'm really settling on, honestly. There's really no need to limit this for yourself. Art shows up in countless ways and forms, especially in nature. I say just look out your window and you'll be reminded of the endless mediums and tools possible for crafting new magical art forms and imagery of your own.
You know, in my sigil journey, I found myself drawn to specific shapes and patterns. Did you find yourself drawn to anything specific? And, you know, what did that shape mean for you if you did?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think the one that surprised me the most was the shape of lines splitting into more lines. In my sigil, this showed up in two ways, the antlers for wisdom and the roots for strength. Mm-hmm. They're sort of almost mirror images of each other, but mean sort of different things. But this is definitely one of those shapes, like, it's innumerable and meaningful in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Structures of leaves, the veins and arteries of the body, the wrinkles on the skin, tributaries and streams breaking off rivers, even branches of trees and lightning, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is everywhere. Yeah. It's also not lost on me that the idea of lines branching is something we humans can't help but incorporate into freaking everything in designs of modern civilization. I mean, carpentry, metalwork, abstract virtual things like process maps and software coding branches. Yeah. I mean, we branch our lines. This is what we do. It makes sense to us. And so that was, I just kept kind of honing in on ways to utilize that.
We've sort of touched on your passion project a little bit in this episode. And I know you're looking to do a visual piece. And you said that you were going to do painting, but wasn't sure if you were going to do sigils in it. So are you going to incorporate sigils? Are you going to kind of let yourself explore that, or maybe not?
Yeah, this whole topic has perhaps inevitably completely revised my plans for the passion project. My initial plans to paint this witchy scene above my altar.
Yeah.
What I'm shifting to now is a series of smaller sigil paintings to follow along the walls of the room where my altar lives. These might even be simpler images, like less sigils, more symbols, but like they might be, I'm playing around with that. But basically, they'll capture important things to my practice. I'm playing around with a couple ideas. They could be elemental representations at cardinal directions.
Nice.
They might be our pillars of witch, like symbols that represent each, which isn't even a thing we've done, but
I would love to.
A cool way this was going. They might be personal value principle words, similar to the witchy power ones. Things maybe it's actually those mundane words, things like kindness, things like giving and openness. Or even craft method symbols, like for music or movement or writing. And I can add to these over time as I try out new things, like a little visual compendium of magical roads I've walked, right? It's all sorts of interesting ways. As soon as I went from one big image to several little images, all of a sudden, like, the creative possibilities have exploded. So it's been a really cool change, actually.
Yeah, it's a good little, you know, winding path to follow. And you kind of mentioned maybe creating a collection here of sigils, but do you kind of plan on creating a bigger sigil compendium, or do you think you'll kind of stick to making them as you need them, kind of single shape use?
I would like to really develop a sort of compendium, like collecting and logging them. It's like, even if they're single use at the moment, unless they are specifically designed to be banished away so I never see them again, which is totally cool, keeping a record is a great way to capture the knowledge of these past experiences to then inform future designs and ideas too. You know, as I mentioned this in the last episode too, but like, there's no need for any sigil or symbol to ever be truly finished. Symbols change meaning for us over time. You know, something you used to see as positive and great years ago, because of new knowledge and associations, suddenly becomes something you maybe want to avoid.
Yeah, that's real.
Not keep drawing all over everything. that kind of growth and development is fine. It's great. It should be welcomed.
You touched on, like, hitting sort of all this shadow work and a couple of things reared their heads, but did you have any other unexpected discoveries or surprises along the way?
It's like the path of unexpected discoveries for me. This, there were so many, besides all of the shadow work. Yes, this subject was so full of them. I was excited to explore it as a one-on-one topic, like for that reason, right? Everything was new. I think the most unexpected personal discovery came amidst that culmination ritual when I realized the sigil could be made into a dance and gestures like that. That had never crossed my mind at all. This movement has become a really cool way to get that power-up feeling without even needing to have the visual sigil in front of me, because I become the sigil in my moments and shape in any space and moment. This was such a freeing and fantastic discovery. Another thing I'll call out to add to the shadow worky things I mentioned earlier, some of my discoveries, I mean, they came about because of the lovely writing and visual alchemy.
Yeah.
Laura Tepezakharov's particularly excellent at providing a stance that, like, not just witchy, but backed up by professional and lived experience as an artist and her knowledge of, like, the rich history and cultures surrounding all kinds of art forms and traditions and... there's just so much, and so that honestly opened up a lot of personal doors. Your question here makes me think of a particularly cool passage I wrote down in case it was handy here in this conversation, where she was talking about early art in caves,
yeah,
and the theories around purposes for those early art forms. Like, I feel like she talks about, you know, people get really reductionist about cave paintings and be like, oh, they drew a buffalo because they saw a buffalo. It's like, okay, they were humans then too.
Yeah.
They drew art for fun. Like, and so what she says is, this is just a beautiful little quote, I thought. Through the process of making art, we built our ability to share, focus, and work together in groups, encouraging collaboration that helped keep us alive. Art making isn't just a point in evolution, it's a survival technique.
Seriously. And I think, like, honestly, like, we look back at humanity, we haven't changed that much. We still want to create. We've always wanted to create. We always want to express ourselves. Like, I think one of the oldest stone tablets, when they translated it, ended up being like a bad review for this, like, marble worker. Like, it was, we haven't changed that much as people.
Oh man, Stone Age Yelp reviews.
It was so good. It cracked me up.
And I think what that well embodies, that quote, kind of all of this, what amazed me as I read and played around with this art, all the visual arts mean and have meant something incredible to us as a species forever. So that was probably the most deep and sort of giving discovery throughout this entire experience.
Yeah. Well, okay. So given your experience, you know, you dabbled briefly in sigils before really, you know, kind of diving in for this round. And then, you know, sounds like you had a really impactful experience. So do you see yourself now keeping sigil making in your regular practice? Is this a special one-off, or it sounds like you're going to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll answer you with a sneak preview. I'm working on a second sigil now to try this out. I'm not rushing it. It's probably something I'll spend a few months working on as I let this experience kind of like bubble on like a magical simmer pot.
Oh, I love that.
I wanted to just keep releasing more aromas of learnings. Two learnings so far. Any element can work itself into sigil magic. I was really, really focused on fire and air, kind of either or, and it ended up going very air focused at the start of this. It's like, that is what sigils are. It's air and fire. Any element can work itself in. Your choice of elemental mediums, representations, colors so far, there's simply more ways to artistically create your magic. So for instance, my new sigil's likely going to be combining a mix of fire and earth, which leads me to learning number two. I'm looking into building this two-sided aspect, this problem and the goal, into the charging ritual itself. Ash, Alyssa, you both helped me consider a sigil that's perhaps, we've talked about this on our own conversations, it exists on both sides of a horizon line.
Yeah.
One half representing the past, the other representing the future. And from there, I can see an interesting ritual of perhaps burning away the half to be left behind using a burnable approach like pencil and paper with an earth rocky half using chalk on rock. That's the sigil that's left standing. That's the half that's left standing to embody the future to be attained. I don't know. It's a work in progress, right?
Yeah, but I mean, think it can that's even go back to that. You were saying something about like having something that represents both the problem and the solution, right? Mm-hmm. So that horizon line could also work in that way.
Yeah, all of this has been really interesting. I'm really excited to keep trying anything out. And this topic was honestly amazing. It's opened whole new doors to not just my witchy tools and tricks, but to like who I am as a creative person and how I'm able to express the sometimes wordless things I'm trying to say. It's funny, I started this, one of my very first things in the first episode here was, well, I wanted to do sigils because my practice is so full of words. It's like words, words, words. I wanted to do something that was not mm-hmm. about words. But what this actually gave me was a language. It just gave me a new language, language of imagery. And so now, thanks to this, I'm excited to just keep on doodling down this road.
Any advice for folks who are wanting to doodle down the road and just starting out with sigils?
Yeah. Don't ask permission from anyone or anything to start making art.
Yes, please.
You don't need any special training, degrees, approvals here. Loving working with sigils, I found, really starts with just loving working with imagery, and thus just loving imagery overall. Follow your instincts when it comes to the tools, mediums, and habits you're initially drawn to. And especially if you're getting off to a wobbly start, my advice, don't erase your mistakes. This actually, she mentions it in the book too. Right out the gate, I bought this really nice little eraser meant for colored pencils. I felt so special. And it was like $2, but it was like a specific kind of eraser that said good for colored pencils. Yeah, I was really pumped about it and felt like, this was a good thing to get as I got started. But as I drew more things and played around, there became this wonderful value in self-honor in allowing prior drafts and attempts to just keep existing.
Yeah.
I still used my eraser, like here and there, especially when tinkering with my sigil design. Don't get me wrong, it's still a totally useful tool. But I do suggest fighting the instinct to actually eliminate prior attempts you didn't like or didn't make the cut. Let them be, to give presence to the journey you're on. And on the magical side, as you're building your first sigil and considering your intent, I recommend considering the flip side to your goal, seeing how you can represent that in your symbolism. This lets you offer up a sigil which both helps you get where you want to go while acknowledging where you've been and why that new goal is important and meaningful to reach one day.
So you have a couple of tattoos on your body right now that have very deep meaning for you. Do you ever foresee yourself crafting a sigil and then getting it tattooed on yourself?
How did I not think of that before this? Oh, wow. Yeah. I would love to do that. That's very cool. And in fact, I think, I don't know what it would be. My brain's like overloaded right now. I see that being a really cool way to connect. I've already talked about kind of living in my body with this sigil, like turning it into gestures and movements. So I can see a connection there, right? Where, for instance, if I put something on my arm or it's like a certain part of my arm, that then plays into maybe the kind of movement that connects with this image and its meaning. That's a really cool idea. I love tattoos and tattoo art, and I think that's a very powerful way to connect something that you fundamentally know is important to you right into your actual flesh.
I would just say that if you, as somebody who has quite a few of these kind of tattoos on my body, do something of your own design so that it's something that you own. I highly recommend that. Just because shared symbols over time can indeed change meaning, mm-hmm. Which is unfortunate. And, if you don't have ownership of that history or that, trajectory, sometimes tattoos can just be a bummer or something you want to like cover up. Mm-hmm. But that being said, when you make it yourself, it has this amazing potency and power. So, finding something you really love and connect with. And I always just recommend, even if you make it yourself, double check your imagery. Sometimes we accidentally pick up on shapes and stuff from other places and don't realize that it's actually an existing symbol. Yeah. We had this moment as a team when we were putting together some slides for, social media, and just like, oh, we pulled a symbol, and it was like all of us looked in like, well, that feels like it maybe exists somewhere. And so, kind of did a reverse search and found, oh, yeah, it definitely does. Maybe we use something else that we create so that we're not using an existing symbol.
And the last thing I would say here too is this connects in with the sort of, we talked a little bit about different mediums and different like ways to create art. Mm-hmm. you know, that choice of medium and tool is part of your intent. It's part of expressing that intent, right? So like if the point is to create something kind of loose and easy to adjust, great. Use something that's loose and easy to adjust. Actually, chalk on rock's not a bad idea because it's pretty easy to change chalk. Carving something into rock, little different. So like if the point of the intent is a sense of permanence, right? Is a sense of it can withstand sort of, for instance, outside forces. You might want to pick something that's quite sturdy. So I would say tattoo on the body is a pretty solid example of one of the sturdier of choices.
Yeah, and you know, and on that note, it's also good to just say, like, you know, if you are out in nature, it is not okay to be carving sigils into rocks or trees or any other sort of natural elements. Like, no, friends. You could draw it in the dirt. You can draw it in the sand with your finger. You could take pine cones and make the shape. You know, like this is non-permanent. We are not scarring nature.
Oh, yes.
If I catch anyone carving sigils into a living tree, I will personally find you and revoke your witch card. You're done.
She will carve a sigil.
You get none.
Particular sigil into you. I think the idea.
Wow.
The idea of chalk and rock. That's a great point. And I should clarify my plan of like the rock for this are going to be like stone tiles.
Yeah. Basically,
like manufactured rock.
That you own and you're not going out in nature.
Just taking a rock out of the woods and drawing on it. I'm going to do something a little more. So it's for me and meant for me.
Well, and you know, when we talk about bringing those elements in, like bringing the rock and bringing that earth in, you know, we have sigil craft kind of in the air and fire sections of the framework because it's a creative craft and just generally creative crafts tend to live in those areas. But you can, of course, bring in other elements. And I often think of like watercolor as a great way to bring in a little bit of a water element if you wanted to do that, but the medium can be a really great way, as Jay was saying, to bring in different ways to, you know, tie in elements and bring balance.
So you're looking to craft a sigil. I know what that's like. Jokes aside, here is a little meditation to help get your thoughts off the ground, out of your heart, and into the realm of the visual. Find a spot where you can be comfortable. Sitting, lying down, whatever works best for you to settle in for at least 5 to 10 minutes undisturbed. Close your eyes, or if you prefer to keep them open, find yourself something in your view to let them settle on in a soft focus. Take a slow breath in and a slow breath out. Don't worry too much about how long your breaths are, although if counting is helpful to stretch them out a bit, go for it. One more breath in, one more out. Feel the air filling your lungs and enriching your body. With air comes oxygen and other elements, yes, but also regulation of the whole body. With each breath, let the element of air relax your body's muscles and tensions away, from the tip of your head to your eyes, ears, mouth and jaw, neck, shoulders, chest and back, arms and hands, belly and sides, hips and legs, and right down to your feet and toes. In this relaxed state, let the element of air take you over a bit, as if allowing a cushion of levitation raise you off the surface you're on just ever so slightly. So slightly, it's not even visually noticeable, but you can feel the lift. And lifted, floating, sail away. Onward and upward. You're lifting up through the roof over your head. Or if you're outside, perhaps past the treetops and buildings around you, keep lifting through the clouds, until the blue shifts darker and darker. slowing you to a place where you've simply never seen more stars before. In this place, the expanse of space before you, ask, what is my goal? What problem do I wish to solve? Where could I use assistance in something meaningful to me? As the stars and world stretch out before you, imagine lines and shapes connecting things to create lines and curves, circles and spirals, triangles and squares. As you think on these questions and think of the things you would need to achieve your goal, to solve your problem, let the shapes before you dance in and out of what those things mean to you. If something you need is patience, what is the shape of patience? If it's creativity, what is the shape of creativity? Let the display light against the dark shine a light into the possibilities your imagination has been waiting to show you. Don't worry about memorizing everything the stars are showing you. Just enjoy and observe. Just listen with your stellar gaze. When you feel ready, allow yourself to gently descend back into the blue, through the clouds, right back down to your spot here on Earth. Move gently, without rush, as if carried and left by the wings of something kind and secure, returning you home. When you feel ready, breathe again into your body and bones. Open your eyes. Find a pencil and some paper and draw. That wraps up our full moon focused episode on sigil magic. We'll be back again just before the new moon for our next new moon brew, featuring the kickoff of our next lunar cycle topic, Alyssa diving into smoke magic. We'll also bring you more from Charting the Celestial, Resistance Radio, and the creative passion projects we're each creating this year.
You're always welcome to spend time in community with us in our monthly Sunday Havens and in our Discord server.
And join us on Patreon for the newsletter and on social media, where we're doing our best to shine light on our favorite creators, educators, and activists.
And until next time,
keep your world witchy.